Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, synchronized swimming, tailgates before a college football game, late night karaoke, especially late night karaoke. There is nothing better than a duet of summer love, and I can assure you that. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Man, it is the wild, wild west behind the scenes here today with Mr. G and his pods and his headphones. Speaking of the wild west, man, what's cooking in the NBA? I don't know. I think the east and the west are going to come down the last day of the regular season. Everyone says, oh, well, when's that? That's Sunday, actually. So, like, speaking of last night, let's talk about the Pelicans beating the Kings here just really quick. Zion leaves the game with a wrist injury in the first half, comes back, scores 23 of his 31 in the second half. So, with the loss, Kings are now locked into the play-in tournament here. New Orleans can't finish lower than seventh, but it is not in the clear when it comes to avoiding play-in places. Pelicans visit the Warriors Friday, then return home to face the Lakers. Amino Hassan in studio with us, gentlemen. We brought him in as backup because we don't know if Senior is going to be able to hang on here for the next 20 minutes. Gojo, what's up? Take it away.
Wait a minute. So you guys, wait, we've got this whole studio set up. My dad's over here fumbling around with his headphones, and you guys got Amin stuck over here in the corner with the chair here. Amin, we welcome you into the DraftKings headquarters. We're so excited to have you. They put baby in the corner.
This is, look, I was telling Emerson before we came on air, I had no idea. Like, I knew there was a studio and our headquarters was here, but I'd never been. And they keep telling me, hey, man, you got to come up. Like, I'll get there eventually. And so we come up here, Charlotte and I, yesterday, and they give us a little tour. And my mind was blown. Mm-hmm. This place is so awesome. I'm like, why weren't we here all year long?
Yeah.
So I think you guys are going to see a lot more of me around here.
Yeah, come hang out, dude. Amin smells really good this morning, too, guys. I hugged him when he came in the studio. Fresh. Fresh.
I won't lie. When you hugged me, the first thing I thought of is, how old are the drawers you're wearing right now?
Oh, yeah. Well, just so you know, our friends at Saks, I have yet to receive the new batch of underwear that is supposedly coming. I am wearing the old blue ones here, gentlemen. Saks, right here.
Dear God.
Yeah, get you some of that. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Amin.
Shout out to Saks.
Let's expand Amin, that I am word, so please. Sorry of your proximity to Emerson Saks right now in this studio here. Dad, are you back with us? Are you hearing all of this right now? How's this going?
I am. Can you guys hear me okay or no?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is it, man. Oh. That's all I got.
All right, man.
Well, you know what? Dad, we are going to bail you out right now, thankfully, because we've got Amin here. Emerson mentioned we're coming up on the end of the NBA's regular season,
Amin, I know you and Charlotte were in town here. We had the Knicks and Celtics obviously playing last night. And a lot of this towards the end of the regular season, Amin, how hard is it to kind of negotiate who's actually going out here and efforting towards winning? Who's just trying to get to the finish line no matter the seeding order here? Like, how difficult is this portion of the season for NBA teams by and large when you get right up to that finish line?
Okay, so in terms of who's playing to win, that's not difficult at all. They all are. Because everyone's in flux, whether you've got teams in the West, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and Denver fighting for one, or teams lower down trying to stay out of the play-in, move up through the play-in. I mean, the Warriors are at 10. They're looking at like, we could get to 9. We could get to 8 if things break our way. So we have to keep going. And the same thing is happening in the Eastern Conference outside of, obviously, Atlanta and Chicago. They're kind of playing by themselves in the corner. But everybody else, the Heat, the Sixers, the Pacers, the Orlando Magic, everyone's kind of engaged in this, trying to move up. The Knicks you mentioned last night, they're trying to move up to 2. They've got to win out and hope Milwaukee keeps struggling, which they've been doing, and they can get up to the 2 seed, which would be huge, obviously. Like, the Celtics, I think, are the only team that is locked in to their seed and knows exactly where they're going to be, because even Mavs and Clippers, who are locked into 4 or 5, don't know who 4 is going to be, who 5 is going to be. The hard part, Gojo, is who we're going to play. So a lot of NBA playoffs is about matchups. It's about doing intense research for the video staff, for the scouts, right? Like, they're trying to do as much homework as possible for this chess match that's going to take place over 4 to 7 games. That's hard when you don't know who you're going to play. So for those poor scouts and video coordinators, they have to come up with books pretty much for every single opponent they might possibly meet. Wow.
Hey, you know what? Listen, end of the regular season for everybody. Understandable.
We're fraud. Didn't ask for any early, of this. But dude.
It's early out here, too. But no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think is that the biggest difference, I mean, when it comes to the postseason? We hear players talk all the time about the intensity of playoff basketball, from the back end of this, from the personnel department, certainly from the coaching staff and company. Is it just this fact that the game plans you're now putting together are so much more intricate than anything you were doing during the regular season?
1,000%. So typically in the regular season, we're going to play the Celtics tonight, right? So 4 or 5 games ago, there's an assistant coach who is charged with scouting the opponent. So he'll watch the last 4 or 5 games of the Celtics. He'll come up with the game plans. He's got the play calls from the advanced scouts. The video guys give him some video. The day of the game, we'll watch film as a staff, and then we'll cut that down, and then we'll show the players the cut down version, and then we'll cut that down, and then we'll show the players one more time before we play. We play them. That assistant coach does like a postmortem, and then we're on to the next one, because tomorrow night we've got Milwaukee or Chicago or whoever, and that's the rhythm. When it comes to the playoffs, everybody is focused on one opponent. So your whole staff is scouting. Your whole staff is watching film. We are going through every single strength and weakness of our opponent, and we're going to figure it out, because we're going to try and do the things that we like to do, and we're going to try to force them to do the things that they don't like doing. And when you have that kind of focus, including what the players are now watching, only exclusively film of this one opponent, it just brings a higher level of preparation to it. And then for the coaches, all that preparation has to come with it. Plan B, plan C, plan D. Those are the adjustments. People always talk about, these coaches make good adjustments during games. They didn't come up with it on the fly. We studied this. We came up with multiple contingency plans. If they start doing this, we'll start doing that. And so the best prepared teams, the teams that do a good job of preparation, those are typically the ones that you see doing the best adjustments during the playoffs.
I want to get to some of the matchups that you talked about, certainly, that are going to define this postseason and who could potentially be worried about a particular team the most. But while we're coming up on the end of the regular season, I did want to visit on this, because I feel like I've heard more conversation lately about the MVP race that for so long seemed like it was Nikola Jokic locked in a corner, already got this sewn up. But the recent tear that Luka Doncic has been on in a season where he's been scoring at a prolific level already, Amin, is there any part of this late season run that's warranted more of a discussion on this award as it pertains to Luka Doncic having a legitimate claim to an MVP caliber season?
He's played amazing. He's been phenomenal. His play has risen over the weeks, as you pointed out. He's getting better and better. Having said that, I just think that for the voters, part of it is as a 4 or 5 seed, as a lower seed, given that there are other candidates playing on better teams, it's a lot harder to convince them. You got to do something truly remarkable for people to be like, whoa, think about Russell Westbrook when he won his MVP. He did something that no one thought was possible, which was average a triple-double again in this modern era. Now, as it turns out, it's a lot easier. We didn't realize that at the time. So when he did it, it was mind-blowing enough for the voters to say, look, James Harden, I know you had a great season and the Rockets have been amazing, but Russell Westbrook is the pick. Luka's been phenomenal. I don't know if he's been mind-blowingly phenomenal to overcome the seasons that Jokic has had, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson. Like, I think all of those guys are also having great seasons and their teams are doing better. That's not a knock on Luka. It's just illustrating how tough the field is.
Is this Dallas team capable of making a run in the West? I mean, you mentioned their spot in the seeding and how it's locked into a certain range at this point, but we feel like we've got seen better production out of them with Kyrie lately since the deadline and since the second half of the season. There's obviously been some improvements for a team that seemed pretty dreadful defensively through the first half of the season. Is this a team now that's actually positioned to potentially make a run?
I'll be honest with you, Gojo. The media, we don't get to vote for executive of the year, but Nico Harrison for Dallas, whoever votes on that, I think it's the other execs, he deserves a lot of credit. He went out in the deadline and he made a massive deal. It wasn't a sexy deal that a lead sports show is like, oh my God, the Mavericks got big name blockbuster superstar, but Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington, those are two guys that have been so instrumental to the Mavericks' improved play since basically the trade deadline and since All-Star break. They've been phenomenal. They answered a lot of the questions, filled a lot of the holes they had about their supporting cast, about defense, and they've been a lot better. And then you mentioned Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, the synergy. They've unlocked a higher level, and this is what Luka's been searching for his entire career. Remember the failed thing with Porzingis? You go through the years, he just hasn't been a guy who plays well with others, meaning I'm not talking about like being a bad teammate, but just finding a way to make the game easier by leaning on someone else. He's been, the ball's in my hands and I do it all. And finally, in Kyrie Irving, he's found a peer. He's found someone to help lift the burden off of him. So when you talk about those two offensively, the two of the most unstoppable individual forces combining to make this offense amazing, and then you supplement that with great defense, great all-round role player, bench play, the Mavericks are for real. Are they going to go to the finals? I'll put it to you like this, Gojo. Every year, like before the playoffs start, I look at my list of teams that I think have a legitimate chance of going to the NBA finals so I can book hotel rooms. Because if you wait until it's announced, you're going to be too late. Either there's going to be no availability or you're going to be like $1,000 a night. So I get a head start, and guess who's on my list? The Dallas Mavericks. I'm booked already.
DraftKings will pay for
it. All right, so the Dallas Mavericks are on Amin's pre-booking NBA Finals list. Who else has made this exclusive club, Amin?
Okay, so the Boston Celtics have made it. The Minnesota Timberwolves have made it. The Denver Nuggets have made it. The Clippers have made it, or the Lakers. I don't know. I just did L.A. The Knicks have made it. You know who hasn't made it? This is going to shock a lot of people. And it's not because I don't think they're good or I see warning signs or whatever. The Oklahoma City Thunder. And the reason for me is I just do not believe that a team that young with zero playoff experience goes to the NBA Finals. It's just too tough of a path. I'm not saying they're going to get knocked out in the first round or anything like that. I'm just saying at some point that lack of experience rears its head. So unfortunately, OKC, I do not have a hotel booking in your town.
That's interesting, and I feel like between OKC and a couple other teams, there's some younger squads like that that have come online this year and done really well. I mean, even Minnesota to an extent with Anthony Edwards making this huge star turn this year and those Twin Towers pieces and Gobert and Kat finally coming together, I feel like in the West we've been talking about a lot of those teams that have sort of burst onto the scene and elevated themselves in this conversation. So you're saying Minnesota, would that be the team of, let's say, newcomers-ish that you'd be most comfortable betting on going into the postseason?
They are. That's the youngest team on Amin's short list of NBA Finals possibles. And even then, I made the decision that, you know what, I think they can do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, they've been to the playoffs twice now, right? Those guys, the young guys, Kat and Anthony Edwards. So they have a taste of what it's like, and the preparation, the stuff we talked about earlier, and the heartbreak of when you don't execute, because playoff basketball is all about executing the game plan. When you don't execute, how quickly that thing turns on you. That's part of it. The other part of it is their supporting cast of guys that have been around. You guys like Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson and Mike Conley. Like, these are vets, dude, who have been in the playoffs, have had all those experiences, know the importance of a possession. So, like, it's almost like a subsidy of, yeah, we may not know that much, but we've got some guys who know a lot. When you look at OKC, their big vet is Gordon Hayward, who doesn't play often, right? And then everybody else, first time at the rodeo. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey and the Jalen Williamses. Like, these guys have never been in the playoffs. And I'm reminded of this story years and years ago when LeBron went back to Cleveland, right? Their first game at home was against Chicago. And the crowd is going nuts, obviously. Like, LeBron's back, and we're back to being a great team or whatever. And TNT was there, and cameras, and everybody in the press. And Kyrie, who had never been in the playoffs, leans over to Mike Miller and says, is this what the playoffs are like? And Mike Miller says, no, there's nothing like this. And so that's the thing. Like, when you're young, even a guy who's been in the league 4 or 5 years, you legit have no idea what you're getting into when you go to your first playoff series.
I think that makes this postseason really fascinating. I mean, because there's a lot of teams. You look on the Eastern Conference side, yeah, you've got the Bucks and the Celtics up top there. The Knicks have been in the postseason and have those guys that are tested, but you look down at Cleveland, Orlando, Indiana, these teams that seem like, all right, they're in positions that are a little bit further out ahead, and you've got a lot of teams like Philadelphia, like Miami, and the Western Conference. You've certainly got LeBron and Steph lurking there. Like, how many of these play-in teams, because of that playoff experience, actually have a chance to maybe make meaningful noise?
There are 8 play-in teams, 6 of them. Everyone but Atlanta and Chicago. Wow. Atlanta and Chicago, just talent-wise, they're not on the same level. Gojo, you and I remember back in our day when we were growing up, you fought all year long to be the high seed, the 1 seed or the 2 seed. Why? Because you knew, at least in the first round, I'm going to smack up some 7-8 seed team that has no business. They're just happy to be here. Those days do not exist anymore. The 7 and the 8 seed in both conferences is going to be an incredibly scary team. And it's kind of messed up because you fight all year long to be the 1 seed. Not only am I getting a real tough opponent, I don't even know who it is until after this week of playing games that's going to happen next week. It is such a disadvantage. Whereas the 3 seed, those guys know exactly who they're going to play. They get to spend that week game planning against the 6 seed. The 1 and the 2 seed don't have that luxury. And then you lop onto it. Oh, yeah, by the way, we might be playing the Sixers, who are here only because Embiid missed half the year. And now he's coming back and he's healthy. And Tyrese Maxey's amazing. And they've got a great rhythm. It's like, crap. Or I got to play the Miami Heat, who are an elite defensive team that always seems to turn it on when it comes to the postseason. Or out west, I got to play either Steph Curry, LeBron James, or Kevin Durant, right? Or it's just insanity in terms of who the possibles are that could come out of the play-in that you're going to be matching up against. It makes life difficult already with the matchup, and then with the lack of preparation, you got like a couple of days before you got to get into it.
So with that in mind, how worried should Boston Celtics fans in the East be, who are constantly seeing these, ghosts of Christmas past about all their recent postseason miscues and the things that have popped up there, for a team that's been the most dominant force in the league since the opening tip?
Right. So glass half full, you say, well, this isn't your father's Celtics, right? Jrue Holiday wasn't here for those mess-ups. Kristaps Porzingis wasn't here for those mess-ups. Then you say Derek White was here, but he's so much better of a player than he's, I mean, he should be very seriously considered for most improved. I know he's not going to win it because there's a lot of other great names, but the improvement he's made has been incredible. Glass half empty, it's still Tatum and Brown who have to lead this. Like, they're not going to get saved by a supporting cast. Supporting cast can only do so much. They've got to be the ones that make it happen. And then you look and you say, well, crap, either we got to play last year's MVP, or we got to play this one team that every single time we match up, it's a war. These two teams, the Heat and the Celtics, have met in the conference finals 3 times already, and the Heat have won twice. So there's a part of this where you're saying to yourself, oh, God, not these guys again. But ultimately, The talent gap is sufficient, I think, for the Celtics to feel confident that they can beat anybody in a series.
So does that extend to the West, Amin? Like, is this still Denver's dance to lose ultimately in the postseason?
I think so. I hear a lot of people say, and, you know, I just got done telling you how the Dallas Mavericks are for real, and I believe that they could even go to the finals. But ultimately, everybody seems to have a flaw or a kind of just like a weakness in the armor. Every single team. They all have the ability and the potential to go on magical runs, but for all of them, whether it's, you know, the Pelicans, the Suns, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Mavericks, the Clippers, the T-Wolves, the Thunder, it's all magical. If the Nuggets do it, it's like, yeah, that was supposed to happen. And ultimately, it comes back to one thing and one thing only. Who's the best player in basketball? It's that guy. And he never gets hurt, and he never gets tired. He plays every game. He plays 30-plus minutes. And as long as he plays Nikola Jokic, there's not much you can do other than hope and pray that something good happens, something magical happens.
It's the dad bod god. As my dad, if my dad were able to right now, this is where he would say, you can't pull fat. There's a reason why he's never injured, is because you go out there and you make it look like that. So speaking of being bailed out by a supporting cast with all of this technical difficulty today, Amin El-Hassan absolutely bailing us out, making us better today. This is why everyone needs to check out Oddball, him and Charlotte Wilder. Although I'd imagine when we get there for the draft, Amin, you're still going to be there stealing snacks from the studio.
I'm never leaving. They don't know this yet, but I found a little cubby hole where I could take naps in and stuff like that. Oh. I've got plenty of food and drinks. Emerson.
Big man, I can help you out. I will show you the way, dude, especially with the snack wall.
Get me some sacks as well, man. I need some change of drawers.
All right, guys, let's talk about Jägermeister. They could have written a totally normal ad here, like a really classic ad. They could have talked about their history, the 56 botanicals. It could have been all salesy and cutesy, but they know you don't care. Jägermeister doesn't want to be like all those other ads you've seen and heard. They just wanted to say two things. Jägermeister is great, but everyone has been drinking it wrong. Damn, that's cold.
Drinking it wrong? All right, if that's the case, how should we be drinking it?
They are so glad you asked, and so am I, Dad. I'm here to help you. Ice cold is the answer, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it. That's all they want to tell you. So, wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends or at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister Liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
UFC 300 coming your way tomorrow, and DraftKings Network has you covered with everything you need to know about MMA's biggest event of the year. This card is ridiculous, people. The guys on Morning Combat give their insight on UFC 300 starting at 5 o'clock Eastern, and then Anik and Borian go all in on what is sure to be an amazing card. It is, trust me, from Las Vegas at 6 o'clock Eastern. So get your UFC fix starting at 5 o'clock Eastern time on DraftKings Network this Saturday. Baby, that is going to be good. You know what else is good? What's going down at Augusta National, right, meow? Which brings me to Cash It or Trash It, presented by DraftKings. Stay tuned, because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all that it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. For this edition of Cash It or Trash It, we're looking at the Masters. We're looking at Masters props here, gentlemen. Bryson DeChambeau, the leader at 7-under. Unbelievable round yesterday, battling Mother Nature, windy conditions. The winner of the Masters has finished in the top 10 on day one in each of the last 18 years, except for Tiger Woods in 2005 and in 2019. Gentlemen, Gojo, I'll start with you, because your headphones and your mic are working properly. Are we cashing or trashing, cashing or trashing that Bryson could go wire to wire in this one? Plus 550 right now to win.
I'm going to trash it. I want to see him sustain all of this. And you mentioned kind of chaotic circumstances at Augusta right now. That wind was swirling all day yesterday. You saw the flags on the pins going absolutely nuts, especially towards the end of that round. But a great start for him. No doubt a guy who, Dad, we remember a couple of years ago when all of a sudden he came out talking cash, you know what, about Augusta in general and how the course would play when he's bombing balls off the tee. And his last couple outings there has gotten humbled incredibly. So his approach a lot different this time around. It paid off early in a round where we saw early, and that note from Emerson, I want to underscore this again for people. If your name was not Tiger Woods, and shout out to Kyle Porter at CBS Sports is where I saw this. If your name is not Tiger Woods, no one outside of the top 10 after the first day has won the Masters since 2004. So statistically at this point, that group you're looking at right now that includes Max Homa sitting there in second place, Scottie Scheffler at third place there, on and on down the list. If you're outside of that group, chances are you're going to have a bad time for the rest of this weekend, Dad. So are you cashing or trashing this?
Well, DeChambeau has always been interesting to watch. It looks like he took powerlifting out of his routine anymore. He's definitely lost some size which I think he feels helps him. I'm trashing this, not so much because of Bryson. I trust Scottie Scheffler more to continue to make the run. His tee to green has been phenomenal. It had been his putting that had been his nemesis, but that's getting better. So I just trust him more. And I love it because, you know, the old line, just like us, you watch this dude. I even heard Scott Van Pelt talking about it when they were doing a highlight of his tee shot there. He was like, don't watch his feet. Don't watch his feet. I mean, his feet are like any hack's feet out there, moving all over the place, yet this dude is the number one player in the world. It gives hope to all of us that we can stuck with our swing or not be fundamentally sound and be good, because it's wild to see his feet move the way they do, but the ball just go absolutely where it wants to go. I mean, the dude is a machine, so I am trashing it because I trust him in the next three rounds more than I trust DeChambeau.
It's the Scheffler shuffle. That's what we call it in the golf world. But it's interesting when you compare the two. DeChambeau just looked like, you know, he was pounding balls, and it looked like he was really working hard to get to that 7-under number. And then you watch Scheffler, and it is the most quiet, effortless-looking 6-under at Augusta that I have ever seen. And again, a lot of the guys in the afternoon yesterday, once the rain ripped through, they were dealing with some crazy winds. So to see him shoot that in those crazy winds was even more impressive. Just so low key. It's like we're not even really embracing how good of golf we've seen him play, historical golf we've seen him play over the past year, because we're just so used to it now.
I'm sorry. I stopped really listening after you said that's what we in the golf world call the Scheffler shuffle.
Yeah, shuffle.
This is you're in the golf world.
Absolutely.
You're the main, one of the mainstays in the golf world now.
I'm a gorgeous golf guru. People come to me for inappropriate golf memes on Twitter day in and day out.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, Emerson seems most likely to go the Chubbs Peterson, it's all in the hips route of golf tutorials.
Yeah, when you guys are here,
somebody swing.
When you guys are here in a couple weeks for draft week, senior, I'll teach you how to do it. All right, we'll do the all in the hips thing. I got you, Big Daddy.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
I look forward to the HR meeting that we're all in coming up after this.
Oh, I'm tight with them. Don't worry.
I have no doubt. You mentioned, though, Dad, the confidence in Scottie Scheffler. Well earned. And Emerson, I think, underscored in the conditions yesterday to go out there and cart a round that was entirely bogey-free on the first day. And I believe only missed two fairways in regulation the entire first round. It was something absurd like that. And we know, again, like you said, tee to green, that had been the stat for him coming into this tournament. The shots gained from tee to green, he had been absurd. And so you've got that, a player that we knew coming in was the best, that's well positioned to do this. And on the other side, like, a lot of hope for all of us on the Tiger Woods front coming through the first day. Yeah. Now, that comes with a caveat, though, because Tiger Woods was one of the groups that got an especially late start because of the weather yesterday. And so while Tiger sits right now at even par through 17 holes of his first round, that first round is still going on today. Tiger is ultimately going to end up having to play, I believe, 23 holes today between the end of his first round and then the entirety of his second round. And, Dad, for a guy where injury is the main concern, an older guy, the weather's still a factor, this is one of the absolute worst things I think could have happened for what felt like a very promising start. He was 1-under through 9 yesterday, still sitting at even now, well within range of making the cut, which is what we all hope, but a major worry based on what we know physically he's up against now.
And that's the thing with Tiger. Every time he golfs, right, it's going to be, what's the weather like? What's the situation like? How is it going to be for him walking? Because you see that slight limp as it goes, and does it get worse and worse? So I'm with you. I mean, we talked about this yesterday. I did not want to trash it of him making the cut, but I did. With my heart, I wanted him to make it. But with my head, if I'm putting some cheddar on this, I trash this. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. If he can stay at even, what DeChambeau is at 7 under, so he's 7 back. I mean, he's in position to make the cut without question. But to your point, Mike, you're right. I mean, to finish your first round, again, what went into last night, finishing late, how much rehab does he get in right after that, then how much sleep does he get before he gets back out, before he has to go walk on that foot, that ankle, that knee, that back. You know, and how that will affect him. So you're no matter what, all eyes are on him. And I really do hope he makes the cut. That's complete separate story from what we're talking about at the top of the leaderboard.
He's grinding right now for par on 18. And then, guys, he'll tee off at 10-18. So here in 58 minutes, 48 minutes, whatever, 48 minutes here from now. But I think the important thing, he checked most of the boxes for me yesterday through 13 holes. So the guy's swing looked smooth for the most part, had a really saucy looking short game, tons of saves in tough situations. And the most important thing is he did look healthy. Now, I'm not getting too excited about it because 23 holes today grinding on that course. This is not an easy course to navigate around, but the weather looks good the rest of the way. It's not like a cold downpour like last year when he couldn't finish the weekend.
Yeah, I think, Dad, that's the one thing I think people who haven't been there, and certainly I'm not among that group, but hearing about it from others, way hillier than I think it gets credit for in a lot of people's eyes in terms of navigating that from Tiger's perspective.
I think his job to make the cut obviously just got tougher. I mean, this isn't rocket science. It's a guy whose body is beat up, is now asked to play 23 holes, finish the first round, and play a not even an hour later. So in my opinion, the deck is stacked against him physically. Even if the swing was looking good, he was feeling good. You know, all that can go out the window when physically you just aren't there and what it starts to do to your round and to your swing. So you said the right word, Emerson, grinding. I think he is going to be grinding all day long just to make the cut.
Stamina is going to be key. So it's a good thing he gave up sex during his Masters prep, okay?
Oh, God.
It's true.
See? Exactly. So now he's plus one through the first 18. He's got time for some orange slices, a juice box, and then we get Tiger back out on the course for another round at Augusta.
It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with code GOLIC. Only on the DK Horse app. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states, to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com.
All right, welcome back to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr. and Mike Golic Sr. here, and spring football going on in a variety of different ways right now. You've obviously got a bunch of great colleges back out there getting their 15 practices in right now before everyone gets sent home for a little bit of summer break, but we've also had the UFL going on right now, the combined XFL and USFL getting together under the tutelage of The Rock, trying to give a bunch of guys a great opportunity. And for more on that and the general state of things in the world of football, pumped to have our guy Jake Butt back on with the program with us former great Michigan tight end, now doing great job on color over at the Big Ten Network and at the UFL, Jake. So good morning, man. How's this been so far for you through the first couple of weeks of this season where these two former spring leagues merged into one, trying to give guys that crack at it?
It's been awesome. I'm curious. I feel like there's an appetite for football. I don't know that anyone will ever be full on football here in America. I certainly won't. If it's on TV, I'm tuning in. And you're exactly right. Like, you're giving guys a chance. There's some great stories. And yet, like, the conversation, I think, is changing. And by the end of the year, it will change. Once the two leagues merged, I think you could start to say, man, you have some really good football being played now. Like, the rosters are twice as good. They're twice as deep. You know, it's the early part of the season, so I think defenses usually do have that advantage. It's more reactionary earlier in the season. But once the offenses have a chance to figure out their identity and get some chemistry going, I mean, my first game was Michigan versus the St. Louis Battlehawks, and it started slow, to be expected. But those last 2-3 minutes were really explosive, really fun. And then we saw like a 64-yard field goal get hit as a game winner, and the crowd was going nuts. So, you know, I think what America, their trust was broken with the spring league starting up and then stopping and then starting. What you're now seeing is some consistency which allows fan bases to grow. To me, it's awesome, and I'm glad we have it.
So, listen, me too, all of us are, because we're the only sport that doesn't have that true minor league, right? All the other sports have a number of ways they can grab other talent. The football did not have that, or hasn't had anything that's been sustainable outside of NFL Europe, which the NFL owned, and then, you know, realized this isn't a good money thing for us and stopped. So, Jake, while all that is true, I agree with everything you said. We all know what's the sustainability. And it's just a matter of how much money is The Rock and the other owners willing to lose over a number of years before they see if this thing hits. And when I say hit, I mean start a partnership with the NFL. Do you see that in the future for the UFL? Because that's the way it's going to survive.
Oh, I think that has to be long-term vision. I believe that is their long-term vision. And really, you know, the minor league is college football, right? It like that, yeah. And college football Saturday, right. Yeah. NFL Sunday. And what this league does, you know, it reminds me, you know, when Jim Harbaugh came to Michigan, like one of his first ever team meetings, he would tell us, he's like, hey, you know, we'd have 4-hour practices. You know, some teams would have an hour and a half of meetings and 2.5 hour of practices. He got rid of the hour and a half of meetings because he told us, hey, if you want to get better at playing football, then you play more football. So when it's a little bit of quieter time in the year, obviously no college football. I know OTAs are going to be starting back up soon. These guys are playing ball. They're getting better at playing football in a competitive, fun league. And to your point, you know, long-term, I think the NFL is they can always move slowly, but do they see this as an asset? Do they see this as a long-term partnership? That would be huge for the league to get that credibility. And again, I believe we have a few years of runway here, right? Like you talk about, I believe there is significant investment. The numbers have come about positively. You look at the attendance in some of the cities. When they're up against opening weekend in the MLB, you got the end of the women's and men's college basketball tournament. The numbers are very encouraging.
Yeah, I think you're right. All the signs seem to be pointing in a positive direction. You look now, I mean, you've got direct proof of concept from the old XFL with the kickoff that's now going to be implemented
Yes. In
the National Football League. They looked and they found immediate utility that's going to go into practice this season in the NFL, where what you're watching now in the spring league is going to be exactly the thing that you're seeing on Sundays this upcoming fall. So I'm with you on that, Jake. I think seeing that, I'd have to imagine inside this circle for the UFL has gone a long way in making everyone feel bold and better about what the situation is.
Well, I encourage people to watch it because there's a few things that should be implemented right now. They like have a live tracker in the football. So you don't need to measure the sticks.
Yes.
We're all sitting here as football guys, like, come on, let's get this going, right? It's time to modernize the game. I also love, like, you know, You get the live replay with your head rules analyst who's walking you through what the call is in real time. And, you know, from what I've read with fans, they love that and appreciate it. Like those are two things that I think fans would absolutely embrace day one. And again, the NFL has the advantage as an established powerhouse league. They can move slowly. So do you partner with the UFL in that sense to try to see what the future, the game's changing. We know this, the game's changing. So could you partner with the UFL to still move slowly and see what might work in your league?
So I'm wondering, Jake, what you think the percentage is of players who are trying to make it to the NFL and players that know they're not going to make it there, but know that they can continue their dream of playing.
That's a great question. And I think there's, you know, there's probably a handful of guys on each roster that realistically could be on practice squads right now at a minimum, right? Like there's you're chasing small percentages the higher up you go. Like the difference in the NFL is very, very small for like the back half of the roster, the bottom half of the roster, the practice squad guys. So I do believe there's a handful of dudes on every single roster in the league that could have practice squad talent. And then I think there's, to your point, I think there's a few stories that what we'll see is guys have been able to revitalize their career. Maybe they get that practice squad opportunity from what they've shown in the UFL, and then they actually can make a roster. AJ McCarron was on the sidelines for the Bengals last year. Of course, he's the best quarterback, probably the best player in the league. He's a stud. And that's the next step for this league too, is, you know, the UFC needed Conor McGregor, you know, to really explode the league. It's marketing. I don't know that they have a Conor McGregor right now, but the more that they can have stories to grow and showcase and tell the world about who they are, the better they'll be served.
So you guys can check out Jake as a part of the great UFL coverage on Fox, doing an awesome job broadcasting the opportunity for these guys. We've only got about a minute left with you, Jake, so I want to get this in here. Your alma mater, J.J. McCarthy, I think has been the big story of draft season so far in the lead up. Has any part of the coverage of him surprised you in the way that pro people are talking about this national champion quarterback?
Pro people? No, because it seems like pro people are being grounded and realistic and saying, wow, you know, this guy can do everything we want our quarterback to do. And you know, you try to like draw a circle around the potential of what your quarterbacks can do. And you know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, their highlight tapes might be 20-minute long of full, sexy, beautiful plays. JJ's might only be 12 or 13 because, you know, he didn't play in a bunch of shootouts. But everything that those guys can do, JJ has shown he's capable of doing, just maybe not the volume of it. And what I know you guys know this to be true is there was a scout came out and showed a scouting report talking about J.J. McCarthy as like a 16-year-old in high school going to Michigan. And he was telling other recruits that, hey, if you want to chase girls or party, don't come to Michigan. We're here to win. That's a 16-year-old at the time telling that when Michigan was struggling, they were very much struggling at that time. That's leadership. That's competitiveness. That's ownership of your craft. And then that sets high expectations, and he exceeded him at Michigan. Like, again, he's got the physical traits. I think that's the piece that's making people really excited about JJ. It's that off-field character leadership aspect.
No doubt the intangibles seem to be a big part of the sell and the package there. Jake, can't thank you enough, man, for the time. Really appreciate it. Congratulations. I know you got a wedding coming up, man. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking to you again soon, brother.
Always good to see you guys. Thanks.
All right, guys, time to finish off the show the way we always do. This, that, and the third. Three quick stories to send you off into the rest of your day. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, review us, leave us a 5-star rating, and check us out live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern when you can here on DraftKings Network. You can catch the best of Gojo and Golic from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern with our great lineup over at VSiN, wherever you hear them on the radio, or if you miss it in any of those spots here, or our great guests. And we had a bunch of them today. Thank you to former Major League pitcher Rob Dibble, who stopped by today, our buddy Amin El Hassan from Oddball. with Charlotte Wilder here on the DraftKings Network, and Jake Budd, who just stopped by, former Michigan tight end, doing a great job covering ball over at the Big Ten and the UFL on Fox. You missed any of that, catch it wherever you get your podcast or right here on YouTube as soon as we get done with the show. Dad, let's get to this and start off on the NFL front. New news the other day with the lids. 2 years after alternate helmet designs were approved to return to the NFL, the league's expanded its uniform policy to allow for a third helmet to be added to each team's uniform closets. The league announced Wednesday with a memo here. I love this stuff, Dad. We always talked about this relative to our alma mater at Notre Dame. Every year we would do the Shamrock Series game where we'd get a different helmet. It was something new, and the traditionalists hated it, but we sit around there wearing the same uniforms all the time, seeing other people have that fun. And so to get to go and kind of explore that possibility is awesome. And now for NFL teams who have taken some more liberties, who have a bunch of the old school helmets you can draw on here, I love this little variety they've added into things.
Absolutely love it. I'm just amazed at the amount of people that complain. I mean, they just see something a little bit different and they think it's the worst thing in the world. I love it. And sometimes are there going to be misses? Yeah. Sometimes you're going to strike out instead of hitting a home run. Yeah. But I love the attempt. Absolutely. I think they should allow different versions of uniforms as well as helmets. You know, mix it up a little bit. It can only help memorabilia because people will go out and buy that stuff as well. So I'm all for this. I am all for trying different variations. As we said, third helmet here, but I would just even say different variations of uniforms. I'm all cool with that. I love when colleges do it.
I think we can all agree, though, on the NFL front, Emerson, the only helmet we don't want to see back is that Jacksonville gradient helmet that went from, like, teal to black front to back.
Yeah.
That was an abomination.
Yeah, that's an absolute abomination. What I want to see is, and I told you guys during the break, the Jags, their first logo that you couldn't even use, literally looked like the Jaguar, the car logo on their helmet, looked like it was leaping off the helmet. It's pretty damn sick. They couldn't use it because Jaguar was like, No, not so fast, my friend. Sued the hell out of the team, which is why the Jags ended up going with the logo that they did. They've changed it a few times. But yeah, the helmet you are mentioning, Gojo, not a fan of. Not a fan of at all. But
no.
I was not a hater of the mustard uniforms for Color Rush. I actually wasn't. Blake Bortles looked so sexy in that thing.
Huge Color Rush fan here. You're never going to get any pushback from me on that. What I think the NFL needs to do and what teams need to do, hire out the people that do all these Photoshops and edits on Twitter of these helmets. We have handed a generation of people Photoshop and all of these different tools for so long that they've weaponized them in a way that's incredible content online. We see the NFL always engaging with it. Give those people the power to create the helmets of tomorrow, Dad.
And also, like I said, even the uniforms, the only caveat, do not let anybody mess with the uniforms in the NFL of the people that are doing the uniforms in baseball. Keep them away. Keep them away.
Fanatics, get out of here. Yeah. Stay away from our sweet NFL uniforms here. There's already enough swamp ass on NFL offensive linemen. We don't need help from your sweaty jerseys.
What do you mean? We don't want see-through pants? We don't want see-through pants in the NFL?
God.
No, we don't. You don't want to open up that can of worms, my brother. Speaking of can of worms, though, Emerson, let's open up one with Tom Brady, who's already getting itchy and bored at home this offseason.
Yeah, he is. Like, the bajillion-dollar TV contract is supposed to start in the Fox booth here next season. He's not thinking of that. He's potentially reconsidering returning to football. And we have a clip to back me up on this statement.
Let's say one day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs, offense is great.
Patriots,
somebody,
Raiders, look, could be, you never know.
God forbid somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're gonna let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if, I'm always gonna be in good shape, always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Let him play. I don't care that he's an owner. Let him play.
Tom Brady on the Deep Cut podcast, which I think is a part of his Shadow Lion production company. He's in the barbershop chair getting cut up while this is going on. And Dad, I think later on in the interview, he also said he's kind of focused on the here and now, and he mentioned all these other things he has going on, but he does seem like a guy based on his current life situation and the way that he left the game. I would not be stunned at all if come November, we're going to have this conversation dominating First Take at some point of who needs to pick up the phone and call Tom.
Would not shock me one bit. This is a guy who for the last 50 years has had something to do during the football season. It's his first year not. So I can see that thought process. He says he keeps himself in shape. He's always going to be able to throw a football. So I could see that happen. And so Greg Olsen, keep warmed up in the bullpen, man, because they'd be tapping that right arm at some point later on in the season, putting you back up to the number one slot where you have done a phenomenal job. But this is one of the least shocking things I've heard in a while.
Yep, I would agree. Maybe Greg Olsen will be the one leaking to the media. Oh, yeah, such and such team has been linked to Tom Brady coming up here right now. We should give him the space to explore this option and see what happens there. Emerson, oh, Dad, go ahead. What do you got?
I was going to say, think about that, though. Think about if you are a contending team and you do have your quarterback go down, that there is actually Tom Brady who has proven he can still play sitting there possibly waiting to come off the sidelines. Yeah. I mean, when we saw it this past year, grabbing guys off the couch like a Joe Flacco and what they've come in and been able, some have been able to play pretty well. Think of Tom Brady, who's barely been out of the game, coming back of how much he can help your team.
Yep. Yep. You called that least
God
shocking,
help us all.
Least shocking information ever. Yeah. But what about what we have here for the third, Gojo? I can't tell you if I'm super shocked about this news. Jerry Turner, Teresa Ness, you know, the first Golden Bachelor couple here, less than 2 months after their engagement was revealed. That was back in November. They tied the knot on television. So today, I believe it was, they had an announcement to make to the world.
Teresa and I have had a number of heart-to-heart conversations, and we've looked closely at our situation, our living situation, and so forth. And we've kind of come to the conclusion mutually that it's probably time for us to dissolve our marriage.
Get a divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
3 months after getting married.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, living situation. He wanted the top bunk, and she wouldn't give it to him.
No!
Dad, I see you doing your shock face.
Tell me it isn't shock. Tell me it isn't so. No way.
Stop it.
Tell me that people who have been on a show for a few weeks, that their lives together didn't pan out. Tell me the one thing we've been talking about all along, these two are so entrenched in their lives that someone would have to move away from their family, that they would be okay with it. Tell me it didn't happen. Tell me it didn't happen. Tell me that Jerry didn't get found out to be a bit of a dog after everybody fell in love with this guy. Tell me this didn't happen, and I got a whole lot of area to sell you in a swampland. These shows are stupid. These shows are stupid. We get caught up in them. You know somebody for 12 weeks, and you're going to marry them? All the bachelors and bachelorettes we got, and how many marriages have stuck? I mean, you could count it on one hand. They're a joke. And I get forced to watch it every time with your mother.
It's incredibly compelling theater. The Golden Bachelor was a revelation in a franchise that needed a little bit of added life, and albeit got it from people that were much, much older. But you're right. A lot of the edge. This would have been much more devastating to people before the article and the revelation about some of the stuff from Jerry's recent past. And so this is, I think, less of an darn moment and more of a, yeah, we kind of saw this coming now, much like a lot of the rest of the franchise. True love is dead. I have nothing to believe in anymore. Sorry, Mom. I don't know if it's gonna work out. We hope it works out for you and us, though. Download, subscribe, rate, and review this show and our relationship. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys Monday.
Sit
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.